Welcome to the podcast dedicated to making you a faster cyclist. It's the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. My name is Sean Hurley. I am not the host you are used to seeing or hearing here on the podcast, but that's because we have a special edition of the podcast here today. We have a lot of our regular hosts here, but on the other side of the table as guests, and that's because we're talking about something that I think has literally been a topic of conversation for years now on the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, and it's finally going to happen. And that's Cape Epic. It's an 8-day mountain bike stage race in South Africa, and quite a few of our hosts and their teammates are going to be competing. So we'll talk about all things Cape Epic today, race preparation, equipment, expectations for how things are going to go. But let's start by talking about the race itself, and I'm going to turn it over to Trainer Road's Rob Hobson, who is a South Africa-based cyclist, and I think knows the course and knows the event pretty well. So Rob, welcome to the podcast. Let's hear a little bit about what we can expect from Cape Epic this year.
Thanks. Pretty cool to be on a podcast. yeah, Cape Epic, one of South Africa, one of the world's, I would say, hardest mountain bike stage races. So it's a marathon event.
Wait, shoot. Mates out.
Yeah, so it's an 8-stage stage race. So it consists of a prologue and then 7 stages. And the stages generally start in 2004. And it's, yeah, 8 stages taking you around South Africa, mainly the Western Cape. Some of the toughest trails, toughest routes, a lot of elevation. And generally people come out with a pretty good story.
And what kind of terrain? Is it technical racing? Is it relatively mountainous? What can we expect from terrain in the actual race?
So it's definitely changed over the years. It used to be a lot longer stages. And it is a marathon event. So it was a lot longer stages, less technical. But as we've seen the XC scene sort of grow to more technicality, guys running more suspension, the race is sort of followed in suit. So it's you're climbing mountains. There's lots of rocks. There's a lot more single track than there used to be. There used to be mainly Jeep track. So it's definitely not for the average rider to just sort of go and ride. You really have to have ridden a mountain bike and have at least some level of skill to really get through, and for sure fitness.
They knew Nate was coming. That's why they changed it up.
Yeah, how technical is technical? Because we should talk about this, because I was in South Africa in January, and all the riders were like, oh, we're doing tech stuff. And then I was there with Conrad Stoltz, who is also from our area. And he's like, it's not technical. So,
but
what is it?
To be honest, Conrad is a pretty skilled rider. I mean, 7-time Xterra World champ. So if you were with Conrad, I think you've got more than enough skill to take it on.
He's no, I'm not coach. At Conrad's level. He was just saying the trails in that area for Cape Epic aren't any harder than the ones in our area in Reno. It's kind of like regular riding where we go to Canada and
it's not BC.
Canada
it's
is insane.
Definitely not BC. Yeah.
Denver, like Colorado area, harder than Reno too, in my opinion. So that's what I'm banking on, at least, that it's not that hard. No, you're fresh and,
When you're fresh, but I guess after a few days, I mean, like, especially looking at this year's routes, it's pretty unrelenting. I mean, every year it's unrelenting, but yeah, it kind of, there's no real give point where you can kind of take it easy, because it's, besides the climbing, a lot of the sections of this year in Cirrus are pretty rocky. So it's also a case of kind of, if you aren't super skilled, you can end up causing yourself a mechanical or a puncture, which is something people try to avoid. But I mean, the terrain is harsh. It's rough. Mm. But like you said, it's not downhill crazy. It's, I would say, and definitely not XC level hard. It's marathon. I don't want to say advanced marathon, but it's tough marathon riding.
And you said one word you used was unrelenting, and looking at the course profile and just the parkour of the race, it's 8 days with no rest days. It starts with a prologue and then it's 7 consecutive brutal stages, which I think is a hard thing to really anticipate in training or even preparation if you've never done anything like that before. So I think it'll be exciting to see how certain of our teams pan out for the course.
Have any of us done anything like this before?
Sophia has.
Maybe you've done the stage race in Israel?
Yeah, but that was like a 3-day, 4-day stage race. And that was it was hard. It was the starts, I think, for me were the hardest, but yeah, nothing this long. So I'm in for a adventure. Wait, that's for sure.
Why were the starts the hardest?
It was, so my partner Rose, she does not like mass starts. So we actually would fall back substantially, even on the stages that we would start first, because we were leading the women's race. So you kind of were doing a 10, 20 minute effort at the very beginning that you really shouldn't have had you like been more aggressive and had your elbows out. So it took us until the last stage to kind of get better. But yeah, it was, it's chaotic. It's a lot of people going together.
Sophia, I can do that. Yeah. We can mix it up. I feel totally comfortable being in a group of mountain bikers, and I'd actually rather be at the front. I mean, we should talk about, can we, I don't want to interrupt.
It's been a while.
So, Sean, can I
go for
it? I have
it,
thoughts
Nate.
In my head. Can
you
I just
are
say
in the driver's seat.
Okay. The first race is a prologue stage, and the prologue is about an hour long, and it is around the university there. There's one very technical section called Plum Pudding. It takes about a minute to get down. People crash on that thing, and you can actually end your race on the first day. But if you go slow, maybe you lose 15 seconds over a 35-hour race. Not a big deal, or maybe 30 for some people on this call. But based on what you do on that first day is you get seated in different start groups. So I think there's two groups, or is there three? Do you guys know?
I don't know this. Yeah. Typically it's been three, right? I don't know this. Yeah. I wonder this year, since it's smaller than it's been in the past, since there's less entrants.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it'll be interesting because I know there's a UCI Pro Men's start that's separate from, then it goes A, B, C, I think normally, but with the event being smaller, there might be, and you go UCI men and then A, B, to split it. Or maybe they'll make more groups to kind of keep gatherings to a limit, or as limited as possible. I don't know.
Either way.
Can I jump in really quick?
You could totally jump in.
That's the voice of Rousseau. We should
introduce
that,
how it's about
right?
to.
Yep. Yep. Let's introduce our teams and all of our competitors. It is a team race. I'm not sure if we mentioned that. So we have 2-person teams, and it's essentially like a team time trial. Jonathan and I were talking about this yesterday. If your teammate, you can't leave your teammate behind. You need to finish together, and it's cumulatively timed. So it really is a team effort throughout the course of the race. So yeah, let's introduce each of our teams. We've had some life changes in Trainer Road, so it's not the teams that we had originally talked about a few years ago, but I think we're going to have some really exciting competition and some interesting team dynamics here. So our first team is 2 Trainer Road support employees, Rob and Rousseau. So why don't you guys introduce yourself, talk a little bit about how you guys envision racing together, and just any kind of experience that you have on the terrain.
When you introduce yourself too. Name and watt kg. Let's be real. That's what we're interested in here.
Are we allowed to use Zwift watt kgs?
I don't know what word you just said. We just bleeped it out. The schedule broke up there. So Rousseau, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Rousseau Becker from South Africa. Started with Trainer Road only a couple of months ago, and yeah, I would say 2 or 3 months ago. And it's been really exciting last couple of months. I was actually entered for Cape Epic last year, my first one, and then it got cancelled, so it was great. and yeah, with things obviously being quite uncertain, we weren't quite sure if this year would actually go ahead. I think it only got the go ahead about a month ago, so we pushed that entry on to next year, and we kind of just said we'll see what happens. And this opportunity came along. So I'm 22. I'm busy finishing up my marketing degree, and I started work for Trainer Road a couple of months ago, and then I like to ride my bike.
We just want to know the watt kg.
I think it's around 5.5.
Around 5.5. Okay. That's fast. Right. That's very fast.
Yeah, that's fine. That'll do.
Yep.
Rob?
I'll do that common intro. I'm Rob Hobson, born and raised in Stellenbosch, where a lot of the Epic stages come through. It's been on my list to do Epic for a while. Every year, my birthday is on an Epic stage in the month of March. And it's like, I've always wanted to do it. But anyway, to jump to the watts per kg, currently I'm sitting on like 5.6. But I'm a pretty light rider, so I'll take long climbs any day over short, punchy race starts.
What's your weight?
Something tells me you guys are going to do okay at this race.
No, actually, I mean, Rousseau and I are both, I mean, both local. We both live pretty close to each other, and we've done quite a few stage races before together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but shorter stage races. But I think we've both done Cape Pioneer, which is another stage race in South Africa, which is also 7 days. It's far more, it's super scenic and not as hard as Epic. I mean, I haven't done Epic, so I don't know, but it's a pretty sick race.
So you, Rob, you also race for the South African national team as well. You've represented them at world championships. In fact, you just did in Elba, right? At Marathon World Champs.
Yeah, I would like to say I represented them, but I don't know how much justice I did to the representation, unfortunately. yeah, my things kind of switched up after being given an opportunity for Epic. So I kind of adjusted things, and unfortunately, it didn't end as I would have liked it to end. But now I'm sort of set on Cape Epic for now and like push for the rest of the season to really make it a solid race.
Nate, imagine if we had kept Chad in, but then just paired Rousseau or Rob with Chad.
Push me.
Would have been the worst experience. Of course, Chad's injured. That's why he's not able to do it either. He can't get he can't figure out that TFL injury he has. So, but yeah, that would have been hilarious.
All right. So you guys have been racing up until recently. So you're in pretty good form too. Is that accurate to say?
I'm going pretty well at the moment.
Awesome.
Kind of like last year was difficult and weird for everyone, and kind of was a big shock to get back into things at the beginning of this year. But it's gone, I would say, got picked up nicely, and I think the timing for Epic came in pretty well.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right, let's go to team number two, or team B, it's referred to here on my my spreadsheet. Brandon and Jonathan.
You don't have exciting names like Thunder and Honey. So, by the way, that
Jonathan, why don't you introduce yourself? We're not familiar with Coach Jonathan Lee here.
Yeah. Nice to meet everybody. I'm Jonathan Lee, and I'm about I'd say I'm a strong and comfortable 4.8 watts per kilogram right now. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. Brandon. And some people have met Brandon before on the podcast, possibly. They've heard us talk about you before for sure. So yeah. Brandon, go ahead.
Yeah. So I am Brandon Need. I am the chief operating officer here at Trainer Road, and my watts per kg are a measly about 5.1 right now.
Compared to these two. Yeah. Rob and Rousseau. Yeah. So Brandon and I are like close-ish. But if we're going on a climb and the steeper the climb gets, Brandon will get further and further away from me. Right. Mm-hmm. So like that's it's a concern I have.
And you guys train together fairly frequently off road too. Is that right?
We've ridden together sometimes this year, but we're both dads and we both have, demanding jobs. So we have not ridden together much at all prior to this. Mm-hmm. Enough to kind of know, like, I feel like I know when Brandon would need to back off the pace on a descent. And sure. Brandon probably knows when he'd need to back off the pace on the climb. I feel like we have that part at least sorted, but that's about it. Yeah.
How about our last team, Nate and Sophia? Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, go Sophia.
Cool. I'm Sophia Gomez-Bichafania, and I think I'm going to go conservative on watts per kg and put me at 4.9. And I'm only saying that because I took a week off the bike last week as I had some stitches on my kneecap. So I'm really excited to get down there soon.
Mm-hmm. Sophia, how many national championships do you have?
Five, I think.
Like you got to count, right? Argentina, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Olympian as well.
How many Olympics have you been to?
Just one.
Just one. It's pretty awesome though. She is the most accomplished racer here, and pretty excited to have her as my teammate. I am Nate. Probably you know me. I am a generous.
This is the moment. Wait, was that 3.2 or 4.2?
4.2, maybe.
Okay.
Generous. I don't know. I've had a lot of life stress lately. I lost like 10 pounds not on purpose, and I haven't been training and stuff. So it's gonna be hard. Sophia, how many hours would you say we've ridden together?
None. Which honestly, I am so amazed that even especially when COVID happened, we're like, okay, we're going to be able to, you know, have time to train together, and our schedules once again never lined up. And I think the first 2 days are going to be a pretty big learning curve of learning how to ride together and picking up, you know, like, you'll know when I'm hurting on the flats, because that's actually what I'm the most worried about, is when you're there rolling coal.
Sophia, there are no flats. There are no flats. There literally are no flats.
Oh, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised.
Yeah, we'll come across flats. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do want to say, I remember, was it in 2019, I was having a conversation with Jonathan, and he's like, oh my goodness, Nate has this crazy idea. He wants to do Cape Epic. He wants to do it with me. I said, like, no way. And I was like, hey, if Nate wants to win co-ed, like, I'm in, you know? And then that's kind of where it all started. And then Jonathan went from saying, there's no way in hell I'm racing Cape Epic, to here we go, you're flying out Monday.
Amber announced that she is going to have a baby, and I just felt very happy, and everything was good. And the question was asked at the wrong time, because I said yes, because it was happy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Sophia and I are racing co-ed. So that's its own division. And I thought there was a chance, because in January I was like 370 FTP and I was light and stuff. And like that was, or yeah, 370, I was on track to do a good job. And there's another team there, the Starks, who are super fast. It's kind of like Sophia racing with Keegan. Like, they're pretty impossible.
Jump on that, Sebastian Stark and Laura Stark, they were actually, I've actually partnered with Sebastian for quite a few races. He's quite a strong German rider.
Yeah.
So and that's like pretty much cleaned up in every COVID race they've done.
It's like Sophia and Keegan.
I'm sorry, but he is pretty strong.
But things happen, right? Is how strong is Laura?
She's pretty, I can't really, she's pretty strong, but to be honest, like Sebastian, we raced together and he's, I don't know at present, I think I spoke to him like a month ago, but he's very strong. So if you know the whole COVID kind of teamwork of whether it's up to you pulling and pushing, that kind of a situation. Whether it's Sophia pulling and pushing you, I don't know.
Yeah. But, Sophia, do you prefer me hanging onto your jersey, or do you just want to push me with the hand?
you can just grab to my saddle.
Okay. Or did you get the towie? That's all we need. She can stash it in her jersey and then toss it out to you. You can hold right on. Mm-hmm. Do you know about towies, Nate? Did you miss that? We made a joke about you on the podcast. I don't know.
No, you sent a meme towards me with my picture on it with a towie. So thanks,
yeah, John. Yeah. Love you. Yeah. Hold on. I think that we all just need to like elephants in the room, like what we're most concerned about with this race. Cause
brain injury.
That's yours, Nate. Oh, no. Crashing and concussion.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's kind of like the fatigue part is the big thing for me. And it's like fatigue adds up, it's cumulative and it compounds also when you're talking about day after day. You do kind of hit a point where you're kind of just down at your knees and that's just what you are. But that's when you make the silly small mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
And one of my main concerns has been like just the upper body stuff, not necessarily upper body strength, but fatigue resistance of your arms and your hands and your wrists. Hands even just getting blisters, right? And then like you get a blister, then you hold your hands different or bars differently.
Sean,
make a crash.
Did I hear you? I wanted to save this for this, but did I hear you're not going to wear gloves?
I have not been wearing gloves for like months leading up to this. Yeah.
That is in Sophia.
Oh no. In the race, I'm wearing gloves. I haven't been wearing gloves leading up to it intentionally
like
to try to get.
I don't wear gloves right now either. Like
I had like, I always wear gloves and I had like wonderfully soft baby hands and they would just get torn apart by this race. So I have not been doing that. I've been doing like full Rocky Balboa, like in between breaks with work when I go out for lunch, I'll go out and I'll move cinder blocks as we're landscaping in our backyard just because my hands get rough and tough that way. Like they're tough now. They're good. And I think we're okay, but that's a big concern because that's what happened at single track six. I got a blister. I don't know what happened, right? Because it was that bad of like a head injury, but I know that race, because of those blisters, I was holding my bars differently all the time to avoid the discomfort and pain and feel like I have more grip on my bars, right? That was also a very rough, very like, you know, that's proper BC gnarly terrain, but still I've been taken out by less. Last time Nate and I rode together, I got taken out in a mud puddle. Like I thought it was straightforward. So, you know,
John, didn't you use brand new gloves though that you've never used before at that BC bike race?
No, they weren't brand new. And I'd used them before, but right. they weren't the best gloves, basically. So yeah, they were, the palms were through too fast. So
they look cool though.
I mean, that's what really matters, right? Look pro, go slow. So yeah, but that's my biggest concern. But I like, it's just making a silly, like a silly mistake being much bigger because of fatigue. Yeah. I'm worried about that.
And I know for you all in Reno too, training, especially outdoors this year, has been kind of hindered by the smoke. So I'm wondering if that's adjusted your approach to the race or changed kind of how you're thinking about coming into this, especially with the technical demands of the race.
Yeah, I feel, Brandon, do you feel, how do you feel about that? Like, do you feel technically unprepared because we have not been able to ride outside for months?
To an extent, yeah. John and I had planned out a whole week training camp where we were going to go and essentially try to replicate Cape Epic as much as we possibly could. John spent...
We were doing Cape John, Epic altitude on only single track. It was like...
It's, sounds awesome.
Not to do it.
Yeah. No, it was good. So John basically spent way too much time mapping out all these different courses that even the profiles themselves looked like every stage of Cape Epic. So we had plans to do that. And then the smoke rolled in and really never let up until fairly recently. So
yesterday,
fortunately, yeah. Fortunately, I was able to find a bit of a break during one other week leading up to things and was able to get out and do three back-to-back-to-back 4 to 6 hour mountain bike rides, almost all on single track or especially rocky things, just to kind of get a little bit more of that feeling of what that upper body demand is going to be like and what some of that residual fatigue is going to be like. So based on that, I feel pretty prepared for things. Certainly more prepared than Nate. So that's good enough for me.
Zing.
Nate's going to race into fitness by day seven. Yeah. He's going to be flying.
We're going to win the last stage. We're winning the last stage.
There we are. Actually, I think the last stage is that the one that has like, Nate, I thought of you when I saw this profile, which by the way, next week we'll have a podcast where we talk all about the courses in depth or the stages in depth. But, one of the stages, it's either six or seven. It's like slightly downhill and just like very small fluctuations on the elevation profile. And I was like, that might be some coal rolling time for Nate, depending on what the trail's like.
Myself for that last day. And I'll take one of your PA chain rings. We'll do that. I've actually never been, so I've not done races because I'm scared like of like getting hurt, but I've never been not wanting to do a race because I don't feel like I have the fitness. This is the first time where I was pretty close to backing out of not coming to South Africa and finding someone else for Sophia. This is, I know you guys joke about it, but it's probably downright dangerous for me to do this race. And I'm not kidding, I don't want a brain injury. So
sure,
that's
sure.
That's the thing. Two, with Sophia, when we ride together, you were saying learning how to ride together. Like, what do you, like, okay, here's what we should do. We haven't talked about this yet. On the descent, Sophia, so I've ridden with John, and when John just goes, like you're similar to John's speed descending, right? Somewhere around there. Like if you and John descend, is that pretty close?
I think so.
At least slightly slower on my end, but yeah.
On the races that we've done together, sometimes Sophia's faster on the descents, like not together, but like racing the same courses. She's, yeah, right there.
So if I ride with John and John just takes off, I go slower because I have to pick my own lines and stuff. But if John goes like super smooth, I actually go a lot faster because he does all the lines. He just brakes appropriately and that sort of stuff. And once we find that speed where you go, I'm going a little bit faster than Nate would alone, but it's just a smooth, safe speed. And we do that over our 30 something hours of racing. We'll go a lot faster. And then on the other thing that we need to think about, Sophia, is you are much smaller than me. And there will be, there are these. What happens in mountain biking, I'm a big guy. I'm like 186 pounds now. Going up little like steep things, I think when you're smaller and you're used to cross country racing, you'll hit those. But if you hit those a lot over me, there'll be 800 watt surges over and over and over. And as you all know, if you do a workout, there's like one like Ebbets, you're going sweet spot and you have those little surges, that makes that ride so much harder. And you actually end up putting out less kilojoules for the hour, which is the thing we want to do. And because we're not going to be, there's not going to be so much tactics. It's going to be a race of attrition, right? Mm-hmm. This is how much can people not drop off over days? If you do try doing four hard trainer road workouts back to back, like four threshold workouts. That third and fourth one are going to be darn near impossible. But if you do four sweet spot workouts, you can probably nail each one of those. So we have to talk about, can we go to pacing right now for a second? How should we pace this? Because Sophia's like, we're racing. She told me this already. We're racing flat out. She's a pro. Flat out every day. We're going for the win. I have a feeling like the first day, it's the first day is about an hour. I've done it where a 1 hour race, you go all the way in, you feel it for like 3 days, but you do a 1 hour race and you go 95 or 94%. Like you can race after that. What are your all thoughts? Sophia, go.
You know what it is? And I find this so interesting. Like after doing Epic Israel, when you're with a partner, your perception completely changes and you might be going at 100%, but it is not going to feel like 100% because when you're suffering, like you're being held accountable to your partner that's there with you. And you're like, okay, like I need to hurt just a little bit more. Or like, you know, I know I'm hurting. So I tell my partner like, hey, back off. Or like, there's a gap or, you know, all that communication, like, you know, in Epic Israel with Rose, I was like, I don't think I could finish this race by myself. There's no way in hell I could do this race. But with a partner, it's 100% achievable just because you have somebody there with you. You're talking to someone, you're engaging. So for me, I think the first day is good to get a good starting spot for the next corrals, for the next day. But I think we're never both going to be going at 100%. Like there's times that I'm going to be at 100% and you're probably going to be at 80% because it's rolling terrain or it's flat or we're going a little bit downhill, and then it'll switch on a climb. And then you'll be pinned for a little bit, but then I will back off. So it's like, I think that we're not even, it actually is going to be a huge advantage because when I get to recover, you're going hard. And when you're going hard, I get to recover. So I actually think we're going to do better than you expect.
Did you just say when you're going hard, I get to recover? But when is this?
Well, on the flats. Like for
so
me.
So when am I going hard that you get, because of the climbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're going to really surprise yourself. And I think we're going to have a good time. And I think, you know, it's going to be, you got to take it stage by stage and then just keep the communication good, keep it positive. And our goal is to finish. You know, I don't want something to happen to me and you have to continue by yourself or vice versa, or for anybody for that to be the lone, like a cheetah or something, right? When your partner drops out.
Almost. Yeah. Something like that. Mm. Mm-hmm. When you go on and your partner has to DNF, you get like a different jersey and they call you a cheetah, something like that. And like you start in the back or something. Is this right?
Yeah.
Russo?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sophia, you're going to carry all of our, I think this is a joke, but it's also true. It makes sense for you to carry all of our flat stuff and extra things because any weight that we can take off my bike. And also you said you don't like riding with a bottle in your jersey pocket. But is that possible? Because that's still like, what's a bottle? 2 pounds? Full bottle?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. So pounds. If I just have...
We'll figure it out. Trust me. Okay. I'm open to trying. Well, yeah.
Can I bring up a key point?
Pounds
I think
off my bike though. Yeah.
The weight differential thing. It's braking too. It's like if you're going on a descent and suddenly it's like, oh, quick stop. We got to turn left here. The trail turns. Sophia can stop on a dime compared to Nate. Nate has more weight, so he can give himself more traction. But if it's steeper, that means that Nate's weight's going to carry down that hill faster. So like, that's another thing too, is like thinking about that, like with, I still don't know with our group, Brandon, who should lead. Like, what do you think? Should I lead? So I have a descending advantage. Mm-hmm. Should I lead down the descents? Or is, because following is a totally unique skill. That's something that like Rob and Rousseau are probably, and Sophia are really good at. Cross-country racers are uniquely good at following somebody, right? That's a skill, being able to ride close and being able to trust and being able to ride smoothly behind somebody is really hard. It's like, Brandon, do you want to lead on descents or should I lead on descents?
So I think we have a bit of an interesting dynamic that I think it's going to be an advantage to be perfectly honest, because you are a much better descender than me. And I'm going to say this in the nicest way possible. I'm a much better climber than you.
It's true.
So one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I don't know if how feasible this is going to be, because obviously it's a team race and you have to stay within 2 minutes of your partner at all times. So there is a bit of license for a stronger climber to go ahead if there is a long climb. I think that's going to work out nicely because I think I was stalking your Strava recently and we did, there's a basically a 30 minute loop, dry pond loop, where to the top of that, I was just about 2 minutes faster than you. And down to the bottom, you were about almost 2 minutes faster than me. So we were almost exactly the same if you average those things out. So I think there's definitely going to be opportunities for us to use that to our advantage, where I can take the descents and not have to try to push too hard, and can take them a little bit easier. Whereas if I were trying to keep up with you, that would be, Nate has said it's easy following you and I have followed you before, but, sometimes I think it'll be nicer to just be able to take it completely on my own.
So you're thinking, well, yo-yo, like I would go ahead on the descent and then you'll catch me on the climb. The thing I'm worried about though, is that I'm not going to be descending at my normal pace, right? Like I'll likely want to drop that down just because we're talking about an 8-day stage race with longevity. And that will just happen because fatigue will settle in later, but I probably won't have that same advantage. I'm a little worried about separating.
Nate, you're going to have, if you have technical, you're going to issue a crash. You're going to have an issue. You're going to want your partner. And then, John, you're going to make Brandon's descending a lot safer because John picks really good lines. You just go smooth and Brandon gives you 3 or 4 bike lengths. So, you know, not right on your wheel, like a cross country World Cup race, but he gives that and everyone's going to be safer and you're going to be more likely to finish the race. What happens if John gets a flat on the climb and you guys get 2 minutes apart, more than that? And there's a check at the top of the mountain climb.
That's a great point.
You're now disqualified. Yeah. You're out of the race because you wanted to save like an extra minute over 35 hours. Or 20.
It's actually, I think, a penalty, not disqualified.
But, okay.
So you get an hour penalty. Yeah.
John might need you.
Wow.
Imagine an hour penalty in the Tour de France. The cycling world would melt. Yeah.
But like, Brandon, you can also push John on these climbs.
For sure.
Like if you're feeling, or you can hold on to your jersey. Probably holding onto your jersey would be a better thing for like John's technical to go one hand and rather than you go one hand. But that's totally possible. That happens all the time. You watch the video, pushing happens all the time.
You know, and I think it depends too. I don't think like I'm just going to go as hard as I can on the climb, but it could be, we're, you know, 500 feet from the top of the climb at 1 kilometer from the top of the climb. Okay. Let me get out a little bit ahead on this, before this descent, or things like that. I don't know. We haven't really figured it out. We probably should have ridden together.
You would need to be really strategic about doing that too, because looking at the course profiles, most of the courses do have a significant climb near the end, but not directly at the finish line. So if you were to pull too far apart from each other, I think that gap could just kind of open up if you were not really careful about the pacing on that.
And I think the only time that I would ever suggest leaving Nate would be when I know I'm a K away from an aid. And I'm like, give me all your bottles. I'm going to go and I'm going to fill up. So by the time that he gets there, he's not even stopping. I'm like, we go, like, you know, so I think that's, in my experience, that's like the only time that you want to separate from your partner, because even if you do get, you know, be able to crest the, like, why are you going to go do an extra harder effort that you don't have to, you know, like you need to save yourself for when, you know, Jonathan is going to be hurting and you're going to have to be pulling in the work or vice versa. So I think our strategies are going to change very quickly. I think from at round stage 3, we're going to be like, oh, we thought we could do all of these things. And it's like, even the idea of try to have Jonathan lead all the time, like, so a lot of the times it's not even going to happen just because you have other people playing a factor. So I think
also, Brandon might be better too, just descending with clear track, right? Like it just might be better. And I can follow, I can like buzz tire on a descent all day and I'm comfortable, you know? So that's no problem for me. So it might be better to do that. The other thing that I'm thinking of too, is if a teammate gets ahead, and then it puts, like, if Brandon's ahead of me and it puts pressure on me to make up the time on a descent, that's when I'm more likely to make a dumb mistake too. Right. Because all my risk management and assessment will go out the window because I'll be prioritizing other things. So
it seems like it'd be an interesting balance too, between kind of going for the best result you can on each stage and also playing that long game, knowing you have so many stages left to go and the attrition that's going to happen. One thing you said, Sophia, earlier, it was kind of interesting to me too, that idea that when you're riding with a teammate, you can push yourself in most cases a little bit harder than you would on your own, but that could also be a dangerous thing. You know, if it's early in the race and you feel that obligation to go a little harder than you should, you could leave yourself pretty emptied out at the end of that day and then have nothing left over the coming days. So it seems like developing a really good, honest rapport within your team is just as important as being able to kind of motivate each other.
I agree. I had a good question on where are we sleeping? Because usually you sleep in tents. Mm-hmm. But I just want to bring up the fact that I'm a really great CEO and I got us all the VIP packages.
So thank you, Nate.
Hotel rooms and massage and our little van driving us to and from the start. The one thing we're not sure about is food, because we've heard some horror stories of people getting sick either from colds or from food poisoning in the camp. I guess it's really hard to ever tell if it's food poisoning or not. So we're going to try to find food around us, and hopefully we can pack some extra food that we can bring, or we might, we are in South Africa. We have an office there. We're going to have an employee there that could also help us bring food to us if it's an issue. Robin Rousseau, do you guys know anything about that? Are there restaurants on these places where we're going to, or where we're going to stay?
So actually I had a look yesterday, and I've been to all the cool thing about Epic this year as well is there's no big transfers. Like there's an hour and a half transfer from Cape Town to where day one starts in Sierras, but Sierras and Tolbach are close together. And then that's also really close to Wellington, all within 40 minutes of each other. And you're not in the complete nothingness. It is not big towns, but maybe half of Stellenbosch for a comparison. So there are definitely two or three decent restaurants in each town. So it shouldn't be too much of an issue to get hold of anything.
Great.
Yeah.
Another question we had was tires. I think who's on Aspens? I think four of us are on Aspens, right?
You're actually going to run them, Nate?
Yeah. Sophia said I had to.
I think Aspens will be great.
So
what size are you guys running? 2.25s or 2.4?
2.25 for me, EXO. Sophia, what are you?
I have both, actually. So I got two fours mounted, a set of wheels with noodles, one without, and then I have two backup sets of 2.25s.
And Brandon, what are you running?
2.25s.
And John, you're running 2.24s with inserts or without inserts?
2.4s. Yeah, 2.4s with inserts. Yeah. Okay. I'm just surprised you're running them, because we had in our group chat, Nate, for a long time, I thought you were going to pick the specialized tires, which...
Oh, don't go there.
Statistically, this year there were a lot of specialized flat tires at races that we saw. You know,
but also in I don't know if it's the right thing to say, but also in Epic history, if you look at the pro specialized teams and the mechanicals they've had from Kudhavi and Sauza and the top end pros, it's cost them a lot. Not to say it's the tires. I don't know.
Sure.
Just bring that up there. I think what it is that specialized makes. They're really their S Works tire that's really lightweight. And a lot of athletes make the decision to save the weight, but then they end up getting penalized for it because they're just more susceptible to flats. I think like the regular specialized tires are fine, but if you're trying to save the weight, it's just not.
Yeah. It'd be like 170 TPI.
Comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. 170 versus EXO. They're basically like their 170 TPI tires. If you pick grid casing, you're fine, probably.
That's right? What I was going to run was grid casing.
Yeah.
But we're on the same tire. We're good.
We're good.
What about other equipment choices? What are you guys all running for bikes, for gearing, suspension setup, stuff like that? Jonathan, why don't you start?
Yeah. I'm not doing anything unique really with my bike for this race at all. It's like same setup. I'm running the Epic, nothing unique on it. I am running the swap box and everything else that I usually would take off for like the cross country races that I typically do, since this is we want to be able to fix or repairs or anything else I'm going to have my chain breaker tool. I'll have my multi-tool, I'll have my spare tube, the CO2s, the levers, the tire plugs, the tire boot. I'll have all that stuff stashed in the little box on the frame, but I am going to, I'm not going to run a dropper, I think, but I'm bringing both just in case. So I'm pretty comfortable riding without a dropper on most stuff. If it gets really, really intense, like it's big drops or big, like vertical, gnarly, chunky stuff. I mean, really stuff. Yeah. That's when I want my dropper, but I don't think that's what we'll be. We're not riding any EWS courses this year in the Cape Epic. So I think we're fine. So that's my plan, because I'll also need all the help I can get against Brandon with higher watt KG, right? So being able to drop weight on my end to be able to, or will help. So I think that's the only unique thing I'm doing with it. And then I'm going to, for gearing, I'm bringing like 32, 34 and 36 tooth chain rings. I typically ride and race at the 36, but in this case, I think a 34 is probably a better choice. I don't know. We'll find out on next week's episode when we talk with Rousseau all about the course, but I'm going to bring all three of them. So then I have options to pick from. So, and then I have Brandon, a 1050 on the back. I want the 1052, but if like you can get a 1052 cassette these days, like, oh man, you're doing real well. They're hard to find.
Scarce times. Brandon, are you running similar setup to Jonathan?
Yeah. With way less options. I have an older Trek Top Fuel, kind of before they came out with the Super Caliber and everything like that, with SRAM Axis, just a 34 tooth chain ring and a 1050 cassette. So that's kind of that's going to be the go-to. It's going to, what it's going to be. Hopefully that'll work out.
Yeah.
And you're running Ross a dropper, right, Brandon?
I am running a dropper. Yes. Correct. Yeah.
Ross and Rob, how about you guys? What are you running?
So I'm on the Titan Cypher. It's a 100 mil dual suspension. It's a South African brand, so it's quite cool. So the only thing I normally do for stage races, or I generally run my suspension a little bit softer and my tires a little bit harder, to rather lose 10, 15 seconds on the descent than puncture and lose 5 minutes. But yeah, I'd probably run a 36 or 38 and 1050. Yeah, 2.35 tires, nothing too special.
36. One quick question.
Yeah.
Running the 38, do you anticipate getting to situations where you'd be spinning out? Is that why you'd run that, or just because you typically run a 36 or 38?
I
think I'm used to riding a 36, so that's probably what I'll stick to. And I'm just taking the 38 along because I have one, and then there's one, I think stage 4 will be quite fast. So I might put it on for that. But yeah.
Cool.
See how it goes.
Rob, how about you?
I was also, we've got the same bike, same setup. I'm not as a powerful puncher as so maybe. So I think also like he's running a 36. I also run a 36 standard back home, but after being in Europe, I've kind of come to like my 34. And to be honest, at World Champs, I wish I had a 32. the reason, or just to jump on what Jonathan asked about 38 was, again, maybe it's a nerdy side. I like the tech side of cycling, but the 38 I found changes the kinematics of my suspension, and it's, you've got too much bump and it's, you don't track properly with the ground, which is not great. So most bikes are designed around 34. So I stick to 34, 36. And the only sort of other thing to save weight is, instead of carrying all my kind of sharp plugging Dynaplug kind of tools in my pockets, I've got a South African brand as well that goes into the sides of your handlebars. So you can just pull it out and plug your tire instead of carrying it in your pocket.
Nice.
Pockets off the food.
Nate and Sophia, what are you guys on?
Nate, go ahead.
I'm on a 28. Just kidding.
32. John, 10, can you buy me a 34
just in case?
I didn't get you a 34. I think I have an extra 34 though.
Oh, actually, I think I have them all here. Actually, never mind. I got them. 32, 52. I don't see the case where it's going to be some kind of like 2% down and I'm like spinning at 120 and just wishing I had extra gears because it's 30 something hours. Like I want, I'll just coast and like sit down and tuck and get that in. And so that I save energy. Cause it, if you're going that fast, you're going against wind resistance too. That's gonna be a great time to eat, drink and chill. I'm not fit enough to just go all out the whole time. And I'd rather save it for a climb, which I will be limited on our group. And you can still go like pretty fast with a 32.10 on a flat, especially if you can spin it like 110, which I can pretty comfortably. Sophia's bringing 38.
I think the 32 will really help out for like, I think it's stage six, which is something like 85 Ks, 3000 meters or something. It's really ridiculous. Yeah.
Stage five,
stage
I think.
Five. Stage five.
Stage five. Yeah.
It's the climbing of Leadville, but just not as long, like distance. So still without the flat sections, that's what you got.
It's roughly 9,500 feet of climbing. And I think, Sean, it's 58 miles. Is that right? Something like that? It's a lot.
85K, 2,900 meters. I don't have the Imperial in front of me.
9,500 feet of climbing. So...
And without Leadville's altitude, so there's that, but still an absolutely brutal day. Yep.
DL didn't know I'm pretty good at sea level, so we're going
to do well, check that bingo box.
Oh, I'm going to be running my Specialized Epic. Fox right now, they're servicing my suspension, so I am so thankful to them. Shout out to them. They let me drop it off early this morning. I was like, hey guys, I need a suspension service, so they're awesome. I'll probably have a 34 on. The idea of changing a chain ring, I don't think it's going to be something that I'm going to have the energy to do after a race. I think even just getting the bike to turn over and just to be ready to go by the next day.
We'll have mechanics for that, by the way.
So we do.
We have a mechanic package.
Mechanic package.
Ooh, I did not know that. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah.
I think I have my swap box. I have, a bunch of spare parts. So I think, it's going to be normal setup, but pretty excited.
So the people want to know who's waxing their chain for this.
I am.
Nobody else.
I think I have 7 wax chains, so I can just do a new one almost every day.
That's a good setup.
First one over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have do you have enough for the rest of us?
Yeah.
I want to share one.
Chains are so hard. They're so hard to come by right now. Are they the SRAM chains, Nate, or are they different ones?
They're the SRAM chains from Ice Friction. Is that Ice Friction, right?
Yeah.
They're super good. They're better at it than when I wax myself, and they're not even that expensive. And then you can also ship them back. So pretty dope.
Pro tip that I've heard that I cannot validate myself because I have not done it, but I've heard that the Campy 12-speed chain is actually more efficient than the SRAM chain on SRAM mountain bike drivetrains. And that,
so I talked to...
That's right. Been something that people have been using. I don't want to blow anybody out, but like very much top riders that we see have been using those. So that's what I've heard.
Ice Friction about that. And they're like, that's not true. Use the Eagle.
Well, they may not say that. I know that there are a lot of very notable teams that we see watching racing World Cups that use them right now. So who knows, right? They might be doing it on bad information. But the good news is that Cannondale uses Shimano, so definitely not them. But yeah, I wonder. You might be able to piece it together. So, but the interesting thing with this is that right now you cannot get, like, they're extremely hard to find. I don't know if it's in South Africa, but here in the United States, you can't find that 12-speed mountain bike chain from SRAM. It's really, really hard. So not many people buy Campy, relatively speaking. So there's plenty of chains in that regard. So you have an option to go with. So I hear if your chain breaks, I hereby declare we need a lawyer or something to like dissolve me of responsibility, but yeah.
Maybe it's just super clever Campy marketing.
That's it. Make money on the chains, not the group sets. That's where they're at. Yeah.
Right.
So it's the same.
I have a goal for us. I think that's a good goal for us is that every day, in the results, we move up higher in the results. Like we don't get slower, we get faster compared to everyone else. Cause we're not going to drop off. Cause we're going to eat like maniacs and we're not going to sleep in tents. We're going to sleep like 10 hours every night and not have a bunch. Oh, that's another thing too. I stopped caffeine, specifically for lots of reasons, but for this race, because I want a bigger jolt. So if you get, you know, you drink a lot of caffeine all the time, as you drink caffeine, it doesn't have the same impact as you, than if you don't drink any caffeine. Mm-hmm. And what Peter Reed used to do is for Ironman, where he wouldn't do it. And if you drink, if you have too much caffeine during a race, which I've done on big races, like 300 to 800 milligrams, like Leadville, I think was 800, you cannot sleep that next night. And mm-hmm. even the time that it takes, the half-life of caffeine is long. So if you even have it all at like 8 a.m, you're still going to have some caffeine in your body late at night. So I want to do less caffeine in the morning, maybe have a emergency caffeine gel if like we're really, if I'm bonking and there's a huge issue. But hopefully get a bounce from that. And then at night still be able to sleep, because that's another thing is like these stages start at what, 7 a.m, right? Mm-hmm. So 7 a.m. start time. And yeah. We're going to have to get up then to eat what at like 4, Sophia, what do you think? 4 or 5 a.m?
Yeah. It depends how much food preparation we have to do, but yeah. And then we'll have our transfer from the hotel to the start. Mm-hmm. So
I talked to Dr. Pogačar. Is that how I say his name? I can never say it. Friend of the podcast, Poldegar. And he is a PhD in exercise metabolism, extremely fast cyclist, about what you would do for this race to fuel. And he says, the most important thing, get your breakfast in. And then he says about 120 grams an hour or 110 grams an hour for me. And then of carbs on the bike. Make sure you get fructose. He was really important about that. He thinks that this is not proven yet in research, but to have a good amount of fructose with your other kind of glucose that you're eating in the morning, and then to hit 2 other meals of protein with your carbohydrates. And for me to get, or for all of us to get 10 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram of body weight per day. So that's like 860 of me, which I don't think will be a big issue if you eat a lot on the bike. And I've been testing this. So my training's gone down, but I can go long, like pretty easily now. I have no problem. So Sophia, I can't go really high, but I think I can hopefully maintain for a long time. And I've been testing 160 grams per hour. Ooh. And it's been fine.
Wow.
And yeah. It's, I just go, why not double it? But it's been good. And I feel really good. And the next day I feel good. And
why not double it? Most people are like, I'll work my way up. During the race. I'm shooting for like, but basically I'm allowing myself to take in 110 an hour if I take in everything as I should. But I think that I'll probably end up, because of using a hydration pack at different points in each stage, most likely, I'll probably use somewhere around like 100 to 110. The one thing that I've found is that, as the day goes on longer, I was experimenting with like 120 to 130. And as the day goes on longer, I tend to get more gut distress at the end of the day if I'm taking in the whole time around 130. So because of this being like a cumulative stage race, I wanted to be in a spot where I know that I can take that in for 5 hours and be fine. Even though I think that, you know, for like a shorter race, and if it was a 1 day race, I would take in a ton and I'd be fine if my gut sucks after the race, right? Like if that's the case, who cares? It's a 1 day race. But in this case, if I have gut distress after the stage, that means I'm not going to effectively absorb everything I need from the food I'm taking in after the race, which means I'm just going to be putting myself in a hole. So I'm trying to favor like a sustainable approach. I usually mix my own, but I just made the decision yesterday to not mix my own and to instead go with the Marten stuff, because I'm really worried about flying with 50 small Ziploc bags of white powder through customs. And I feel like that would just likely throw a flag that maybe might not get thrown when it's in like packaged stuff. Right. So, mm-hmm. And the one thing I do know is that my stomach works really well on that. Like I've already tested that. So it's not like I'm going in untested.
So that's, Sophia, what are you doing for food? Approach.
I mean, I'm going to eat Clif bars, Clif shots, probably find some other sweet stuff, pick up bananas at the aid stations. I think for me, I'm pretty easy. I just got to eat every 30 minutes. I am concerned about flavor fatigue on breakfast. Like with the stages I've done, even Israel Epic, like I love pancakes. I eat them every morning. But then the last day I was just like, oh, I got to eat this pancake. So I think it's going to be important to kind of switch up breakfast, do some savory stuff, some sweet stuff, just to not have that flavor fatigue. And then yeah, just hydration on my bottles. And yeah, I think I'm being a little too relaxed on this, I think, but I do think it'd be really cool to get a scale and have us all weigh ourselves before the prologue, like day one, and then after day eight, because I'm really curious to see how much body weight we're going to drop over the 8 days, because there's no way you can intake the amount of carbs and food that you need to maintain your weight for over that long amount of time. So I'm curious how many pounds I'm going to lose.
Glycogen and dehydration would be huge too.
That's, yeah.
Sophia, are you going to have a hydration pack?
I'm bringing two. We'll just see, you know, I can fit two water bottles on my bike. So I think.
Do you have an extra long hose?
That can be how you hold on.
Yeah. So I'm serious. If there's a, you wearing an extra one, if there's a long time, then giving it to me later would also be a good strategy for us. Those are all jokes, levels, but this is true.
Levels the Watt-KG a bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, and Brandon should be carrying John's extra tools and stuff too, for sure. And all the spare parts. And Rob, are you a better climber than Rousseau?
Yes.
Yeah. So same thing, right? Rob should be carrying all the extra weight.
That's something like that Sophia mentioned earlier that I'm also a bit scared of, is like, or like you said, the weight difference. Because like I said, I've done Pioneer, which is a similar race to Epic. And I kind of just inhale food, which is a problem. especially in racing. Like I think I burn generally to maintain weight for something like 7,000 calories a day. So adding on 4 hours of racing is going to be interesting. So in previous races before, I've kind of got sick of eating food, because it's like I know the calories I have to meet to sort of be in the right place for the next day, and it's not that easy. So that's kind of like, I guess, where I'll be taking quite a bit of sort of recovery shakes as well, just to bump it up a bit. Obviously that's not the main source of food, but just to kind of peace of mind that I've got that extra fuel for the next days, especially protein. Going into a stage race, protein is sort of recovering you for the next days, the next stages to come. So it's not for that, you know, it's like not, you don't need like glycogen, you don't need it in the moment of the stage, but it's going to help you going through the rest of the stages.
That's a really good point. We talked about this is when we fly into Cape Town, we're going to get whey protein. I don't know if we need a vegan or protein for you guys, but to have have a couple big tubs of protein, just because it is, you can get so full on these races too. And eating like a piece of chicken or a steak can be extremely hard, but drinking a protein shake is a lot easier. And we can also then have protein in recovery right after the stage race. And that's part of the service. We bought a bottle service thing, put in our carb, you know, the carbohydrates, but 4-to-1 probably ratio of that and a whey protein or a vegan protein for John. And then we can chug that too. That's also, again, what Dr.
P.
I just want to mix him up with
Dr. Tim, with Pogacar, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They're both from Slovenia, both extremely fast.
I know. But yeah, that's a good real point that on a stage race to maintain protein, because we don't want to lose muscle mass inside of it. And what's also interesting is if we keep our protein up and we're in a caloric deficit and we sleep enough, it is much more likely that we're going to lose fat mass over those days rather than muscle mass. And we're going to need upper body and lower body muscle mass of being on the bike. Like being fatigued over that time will just kill you on your position, and you're out of position and then you crash, which is really bad. Or you're just getting comfortable and the uncomfortableness gets into your head, and then it's harder to put out watts. So it's super important for us to maintain good nutrition to this whole thing.
Just thinking about this in terms of like calories, which really, you really want to focus on replenishing carbohydrates and protein. Yeah. But carbohydrate is the main thing that you're concerned with. Right. But just thinking of it in terms of calories to give everybody a point of scale, I think for me, it's probably going to be somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 calories that I would need to take in to finish around a zero during this stage race. Right. Like if you think about it, the calories that I'll be burning in the stages are probably somewhere, it's going to be close up to, from the power meter, probably somewhere around 3,500 to 4,000. But then with mountain biking, you inherently burn more. And then you have that afterburn effect that we talked about on the podcast recently, where you end up, like Nate said, that's where fat burn tends to happen too, and everything else. But your caloric burn is heightened after exercise, especially after something like we're doing there. And then if you think about basal metabolic rate and everything else, that's like about 10 bowls, like in the United States here, Chipotle, if you go to that, that's like 10 bowls of Chipotle that you'd have to eat every day to finish, like, you know, at zeros. And this is all rough math, but that gives you a point of like a kind of a point of reference to understand how much food you actually have to eat. That it's not like, okay, small breakfast, take in some stuff on the bike, and then I'll just have a normal lunch and dinner thereafter. Like, no, like eating is your job. Like you have to eat so much. And like you said, Sophia, it is tough. Like you get really tired of eating the same thing or even just tired of eating anything, but you have to get it down the hatch, you know?
Yeah.
Guys, I'm screwed.
we believe in you, Nate. You can do it.
what has you thinking this?
Per day, because I haven't been doing, I've been doing trainer rides, but not 4,000. I haven't hit a 4,000 kilojoule day in like, since probably Leadville or something like that. And yeah, just one of those days will impact me a lot, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah.
Not going to be, no bueno.
I did a 3,700 day on Saturday and I felt just fine. Like carried on. Dad life was uninterrupted thereafter.
Thanks for telling me.
Yeah. You know, just want you to feel good about yourself. But I was worried about the same thing, but honestly, and you know, the interesting thing is I haven't been doing a ton of long rides. I've been doing a lot of sustained work. Like my training's changed in that regard, in the sense that for XEO, I was like the longest I did was like 10 minute intervals. Right. And I was doing everything from 10 minutes and shorter for that course. I was doing that for quite a while leading up to that. And now it's 20 and 30 minute intervals, like 15 to 30 minute intervals is what I was doing, whether it was threshold or sweet spot or tempo. Those are the workouts that I was getting with adaptive training, following the Gran Fondo plan basically is what I was following for that. So it's interesting how that sort of stuff can prepare you to go long. So like you maybe you're good though, Nate. You said you can go long as like the pace is not over the top, then you might be able to, you might be just fine.
Yeah. Sophia, listen to that. Sophia, everyone keeps telling me, not everyone, as in John and Keegan, have told me that you might get spicy with me. Like, do you think you'll be a fiery competitor and might yell at me some? Or
no, because our purpose has changed quite a bit. We went, obviously coming in at first, we wanted to win co-ed. And I think now my goal is making sure that you make it through all 8 days of racing and that you finish the race. But
that's a good goal.
I am known, like I did in collegiate when I was at Fort Lewis College, I was part of our team time trial, and you learn a lot about communication, especially when you're with four people. So I learned that if I'm at the back and I needed to tell someone at the front something, like I yell and I do it once and you're going to hear me, rather than me try to say it like four times and then you not understanding what I say. So I definitely have had to like watch my voice a little bit. But I think we'll be fine.
You'll project. Is that what you're saying?
No. I think like, you know, there's certain things that it's like, you know, you're going to have to yell at me when there's a, like when there's a gap between us, you know, especially going into a descent or like, if you're feeling good and want me to go faster, you're going to have to yell up or down if you want me to slow down and me to you. And it's like, I think it's like the tone of the voice is more just so we're saying it once and it's understood, rather than like me saying, did he say go faster when you said to go slower? And then I pick up the pace. And then, I'm more of like a direct to the point communicator while we're out racing. But I think, no, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. Yeah, we're going to have a great time.
One thing we didn't talk about at all with the nutrition stuff was electrolytes, like sodium replenishment. It says that it's going to be roughly, and these are Fahrenheit temperatures. So Robin Russo, you can give us the Celsius ones, but good to have you guys for that, by the way. Thank goodness. No more Google Translate or convert going on, but it's going to be roughly like 75 degrees for a high. And it looks like down into the low 50s for lows, Fahrenheit. So is it going to be colder than previous Cape Epics because of the time of year?
I think it will be a bit cooler, yeah. Like March is generally, March is normally a really, really hot month. So October, we're kind of just going out of winter. It's still fairly chilly in the morning. It does heat up later, but I think it kind of stays cooler for long. The sun's still coming up a little bit later than what it would be in summer. So that makes a big difference. I think like you're only going to be in, depending on obviously how long you ride, but if we start at 7, then it really picks up from maybe off post 9, 10. So you've got like a good 2-3 hours of some very mild, just nice riding temperature. So I think that all definitely have an impact compared to Epic in March.
I'm just planning on 500 milligrams an hour for me is what I'm planning on taking in for sodium. I think something
that also kind of plays into that is luckily as well, this time of year and also the sort of where we're riding, where the stages are, the weather conditions, it's not that humid. So the humidity isn't that high. So humidity doesn't affect you as much as other areas.
Mm. Yeah. Nate, you're such a heavy sweater, like relatively speaking, you lose compared to me at least, but you lose a ton of fluid and you also lose a lot of sodium. And that's like one big concern too, is on the stage race front, you may be fine on taking in, like you may be checking the box on carbs, but if you're dehydrated, it's just so easy to get dehydrated too, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, John. I have historically, I lose a little, like a liter an hour for cycling in hot conditions without a fan, which I'll probably lose a little bit less when you have cooling with the airflow and stuff outside. But I've also done it where in races, in training, I end up the same weight as when I started. And that's probably overfueling, especially with glycogen loss and too much drinking. You can lose some percent. And like the rule of thumb is you don't want to lose more than 5%. But I can lose a couple pounds for sure in weight. And the question is, I don't want to have, so I guess it doesn't really matter. I just have Sophia carry extra pounds of water as we start in order just to like end the stage. But there's also end the stage at the same weight or more with hydration. But also this is a stage race and ending not in a deficit might help on the subsequent days. Mm-hmm. There's also stopping to pee, which is that's probably not a huge deal for us at all. Cause if our goal is to finish, I guess we can stop to pee, Sophia. But it's all of those things. I'm not sure. I think I'm going to start the first day with just bottles and try to use the bottles. And as we stop at an aid station, chug an extra bottle and then use the bottles that we've given. So I get the right amount of carbohydrate. And then from there we'll bring packs and we'll decide if we need to do extra stuff from there. But and then I'll use the precision hydration, 1,000 milligrams in a bottle. So I'll get like that an hour, 1,000 milligrams.
You guys have the ability to have pre-prepared bottles that are waiting for you at the aid station. Is that something that is possible?
But only two, and there's 3 aid stations. So that's what? So we get 8 bottles of our own choosing per day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking with that, Brandon, we'll probably have to because I don't want to carry a hydration pack if it's going to be a lot of climbing. So ideally I'd carry the hydration pack when there's not as much climbing on the stage. Right. And then we'll have to basically say, so if the stage starts out with a big climb, I don't want to carry a pack, then we'll pick up the pack maybe later on. If that's even possible, do they do
not
that?
Possible. No.
So we would have to start with our pack.
Yeah. I think the rules are a little bit different for the UCI teams, and I tried emailing them. They're not that too flexible about, they're pretty strict. Like the rules are different for the UCI teams and the normal teams. Mm. But I know what Canada has always done in the past, not always, 2019, that worked quite well. They would pick up a hydration pack, water point 2, and then ride with it for the middle of the stage and then drop it again, water point 3. So you get that critical, that middle part of the stage where it's really important to drink. And then they finish off again with a small bottle, start with a small bottle and manage it like that. But yeah, as far as I know, you're only allowed with the, you've got the bottle service thing, but you're only allowed bottles. And I think you have to even like use their bottles that they provide. They're like quite strict with that.
So that means that we're going to have to start with a pack. And then maybe what we'll do, Brandon, is not start with bottles or start with one bottle, depending on the stage. And then pick up the bottles later as we go through. Cause that's one thing. Like if you just every day you're like full pack, 2 big, 700 or 650 milliliter bottles, that's a lot of weight that you're carrying that might not be necessary,
Yeah. So one more thing I want to cover before we go into some rapid fire questions. And if folks who are watching on YouTube have any questions they want to ask, please leave those in the comments for us. For those of us or those of you guys who are traveling, what about something like jet lag? How far in advance are you guys going to arrive? And do you think that's going to be a factor? Because especially coming from the Western or mountain time zones that you all are on, that's going to be a significant change in schedule for you all. So what, if any, strategies are you using to mitigate that?
Sophia and I are flying business class. We're going to sleep and
eat.
He's not joking. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. John and Brandon.
Hey, it's all right. It's all right. We'll make it through. Same strategy that we usually use. And if you go over to that time zone of just, you stay up until you have to go to sleep, you just force yourself into that routine.
Yeah.
And we go six days. Well, how many days ahead of time? 5 days ahead, I think, when we land, because we land Wednesday. So we have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the race starts Sunday. So kind of like 5 days, not enough to fully adapt to the time change, because the time difference is almost like 11 hours, right? Something like that. It's almost opposite.
I think it's the same as Europe. I think they're just, you guys are just 1 hour ahead, perhaps. Is that the case, Robin Russo?
They're like France's and Italy's. Anyways, it's a lot. And what we'll do is I strongly agree too, like no caffeine, because that will mess up your sleep schedule. And then you can do melatonin. But if you do melatonin, like it'll be, you can get a rebound effect. And then that's the worst, is when you're traveling, you take like one of those 5 milligram doses, which is, I think, too much for this. And you go to sleep at 9, then you wake up at 3 a.m. and you just cannot go back to sleep and you are wide awake. That's not a good scenario. If you are going to do melatonin, I'll bring like a 0.5 milligram that maybe just help me push back to sleep. But generally the other things, cool room, no screens, sleep mask, earplugs, go to bed early. They help.
Wake up early too. That's key. Like I think with Keegan and I this year, every time we've gone to Europe, or even when I went to Tokyo, it was, you set your alarm for maybe the first day sleep till 9, but then every day after that, wake up at 8, just because otherwise you could easily sleep till 11 or noon. And then it's really hard to get adjusted. So I think you have to push through the first 2 days on an early morning, and then it'll actually speed up your whole adaptation process by a few days.
You guys have the load sharing going on in Cape Town right now or anywhere?
No. They've been quite good. Like we haven't had.
What is that?
Load sharing are like rolling brownouts where it's planned and you know when the electricity is going to go out. And I sleep with a CPAP. And what happens when it goes out is I just choke because it like, so I wake up and that's not the best way to have sleep in the middle of the night.
Decidedly not.
So I'm happy to hear that's not happening.
Cool. Are we ready for rapid fire?
Yeah. And there's one related to, I guess, that load sharing topic. Does South Africa have charging points along the way for Nate's air fryer? And more importantly, Nate, are you bringing the air fryer?
No, but actually, so funny story. I think we're going to buy a rice cooker, because if we have a rice cooker, we're all going to be in a hotel. And if we buy a rice cooker and then a whole bunch of bags of rice and then some different sauces, that can be a great like way for us just to all snack, and we can get some sweet stuff or some savory stuff, some peanut sauce, some teriyaki. Hopefully, probably not anything spicy. Spicy can, with the amount of food that you're eating, another pro tip. I'm like the only non-pro person here. It's Sean and I.
I'm with you.
When you eat this much food, acidity and spice can cause heartburn. And then when you get in that, have you guys ever had heartburn when you eat too much food?
Yes.
You get hiccups are the first sign. And what happens, you just can't eat any food. And then it can kind of ruin your race that way. So like tomatoes, like you gotta look at like pasta sauces and stuff like that. Coffee. I've had heartburn so bad that like cold water hurt me when trying to eat a bunch. Any alcohol, of course, not good. But if we can do something plain, and not spicy sauces, that'll probably do a better job. Also, low fiber and low fat. That's what Dr. Pojegar said to me.
Dr. P is
low fiber. It does two things: easily to digest stuff, but also we won't carry as much fiber in our gut, and we'll not have as much weight. And then the low fat, just because we're going to be eating so much food, we're going to get our fat in. If you eat 10,000 or not 10,000, what do we say? 7,000 calories of food a day. You're going to get your minimum amount of fat that you need automatically. That your body is going to perform well. You don't need to then raise up on it and have like chicken wings and stuff like that, that are high fat.
Yeah.
It really gives you more respect for Grand Tour athletes too. Think about the logistics of just planning nutrition for a 7-day race. Imagine a 3-week race. That's incredible.
Well, they do nothing. That's actually easier. That's true. Just sit down and the chef goes here. And there's like a huge spread of all foods that are perfect for them. That sounds pretty good. I don't think we're going to have that luxury.
Chef Hannah Grant, maybe we can convince her. She's going to be in South Africa by chance. It'd be awesome. Yeah.
All right. Food related. This is a rapid fire question. And I'm going to mispronounce this, but are you guys keen for a lekker boerie roll, which I take it is some sort of a South African local specialty? So maybe Ross or Rob can clear us up on what that is.
100%. Yes. a lekker, Rousseau can probably pronounce it better. It's the South African language, Afrikaans, similar to Dutch. Lekker means like lekker, really good. And then boerewors roll is kind of like a South African, they want to call it a hot dog, like a sausage roll. Not sausage roll, but yeah, like a hot dog. But it's traditional South African. We generally have it when we braai, which is like a South African word for barbecue. It's far better than a barbecue.
It's the same thing as a barbecue.
But I'm sure there will be plenty of time for a lekker boerewors roll.
Post race sounds like too much fat mid. Yeah. Sounds like too much fat mid race. Give me some post race.
No, I think it'll be definitely a good post race meal.
Ooh, we get to see braai versus asado versus barbecue with this whole thing, because Sophia's country is very proud of their barbecue as well, their asado. So,
and it's closer to American grilling, not barbecue. Yeah. Barbecue being slow and low, long cook. This is more like wood. It's just a like wood, like you do it at a camping or something. You put wood up and you cook stuff, or charcoal.
Yeah, braai is pretty much open fire. Yeah.
Nice.
All right, next rapid fire question. And I'm going to even add a little addendum onto this one. Would you rather have to ride the race on a stock BMX bike or an upright comfort cruiser? Or I will add on Nate's Chamois Hagar as a third option. If you had to pick those three bikes, which would you choose and why?
Yeah, I'd pick the Hagar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
What if we remove the Hagar? Maybe that's an unfair option there. So just the stock BMX bike or the upright comfort cruiser?
None.
I would do BMX because it's easier to carry and I could just walk.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Good point. You just walk either way. So yeah, good point. Yeah.
All right, next up. This is actually a really interesting question. What is the laundry plan? How many pairs of bibs and kits are you bringing? Are you going to be trying to wear a new pair each day? Is it going to be washed in between? That's a serious logistical concern. Yes.
This might clue you in. I'm bringing 8 derail your hangers.
How many stages are there?
I guess I only need 7.
Oh, no,
how many will you have in your pocket each day?
We should actually, that's not a bad idea to have one on us as we go. We have your Shimano though, right, Sophia? Yeah.
So it still uses the SRAM Universal derailleur hanger, even though she uses Shimano drivetrain. Same derailleur.
That's a great idea, because if we have a little teeny crash, that could save us, and it's not hard to change that out. But I'm going to bring every train road kit that I have, enough that, because if I crash, like you crash and you've ruined bibs before, right? I don't want to ruin them and then be trying to find more stuff. But we also got the laundry service, which every day you can give them one kit in a bag and you get that back later on. So I'll bring extra gloves, but I'll try to wash the ones that'll have backup gloves and stuff too if some of them get messed up. And I think everyone else, you are all limited by the amount of trainer road kits that we have, right? Everyone has, I think, 3? Is that right?
I have 3. Yeah. Had 4. Yep. Then Tulsa Tough happens.
You guys, when you go like this, like when you knock your
heads. Yeah.
So yes, yeah, everyone has 3 kits. I have Sophia's new kits right here next to me. So they came in for Sophia's trainer road kits. And
nice. Yep,
that's the laundry service.
I think we have how many different kits for me because we realized very late on that I didn't have jerseys.
And we had to hedge our bets there and go with a few different ones just in case, because tech company turnarounds are notoriously tricky to nail. So
yeah, I know Asos, who sponsors the Cape Epic, they're also a sponsor of our team. They have the jerseys arrived yesterday at 7, but nobody's at the office. So then they have to overnight them to me. But then I don't know what you have. So I got lots of jerseys. Worst case, you guys can fit a small. Ooh. Look at that tiny thing.
It looks so small.
On the arms, they have like the aerodynamic like rivets.
Yeah.
It's really nice too. And the back.
Yeah, if you're not watching on YouTube, Nate just opened up a brand new Trainer Road kit, and it is gleaming white. It is beautiful.
Yeah. Fresh white, very small.
That's another before and after photos, just how not white those go after 8 days.
Yeah, they will lose that pretty fast. Yeah.
All right, next rapid fire question. Do you guys plan on riding based on power data, feel, or a mix of both?
Feel.
All feel. Nate, you look like you have an opinion on this.
What feeling are you going for so far?
Yours.
That's funny. Why don't John and Brandon go? Because you guys are both, know power really well. What do you think?
We're actually not like, our power isn't far off, like relatively speaking. Brandon, what's your FTP set to right now?
315.
And mine's set to 307, but I've been able to like 30 minutes at 315 has been, and doing that three times has been possible. So I think I'm probably around like similar power, but Brandon will just be faster going uphill, right? If he does that. So, we might just be able to use my power data as kind of like a governor, but that said, it's still going to be like feel is the main thing that you can't transgress. But we use power to try to figure out what that feel is. So then each of us can kind of lock in to where we need to be and have something that's guiding us, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of exactly what I was going to say, that the power is going to be more of a governor and then purely based off feel otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause there might be some days where I might climb faster than Brandon and Brandon might be descending faster than me. Like it's just weird. The ebbs and flows you go through in a stage race. So that's why feel is so important. It has to, but you can, that doesn't mean that you disregard power. Mm-hmm. That just means that you can calibrate power to a different feeling or whatever that might be that day. So,
Ross and Rob, is that a similar way for you guys, being that you guys are racing so much and you're at the, you know, elite and pro level? Are you looking at your power meter often during a long mountain bike race?
To be honest, I don't like looking at any data. The only data I kind of try to focus on is time. Purely just to sort of know when to feed and when to eat. Mm-hmm. But regarding power, I guess when you ride at the power meter long enough, you kind of know what you're sitting at. Of course, it's not exact, but you know, I'm definitely, if the stage has got a long climb and end, I shouldn't be going this hard here or there. But then also it's dictated by the race. Cause I mean, if you're in the race, it's often worth sitting in on the lead group for a certain duration and suffering that bit more. Just to get maybe a few more minutes on your competitors or your position. And so there's quite a lot of, won't be looking at power, but we'll be judging it by what happens in the race.
Mm. Rousseau?
Smart.
Yeah, I would say, I think just especially on the really, really long days, it's sometimes worth letting the race go and then knowing yourself and knowing I can't ride like this for 5 hours. Going to tap off a little bit, keep on steady and finish strong rather than blowing up and losing half an hour because you're pedaling in squares. So, yeah, that's kind of my theory on that, I think. And everyone that I've spoken to in the past said, Epic, you're definitely going to have one bad day. So you must try and aim that you and your partner's bad day overlap, because you're going to lose a lot. If today I have a bad day and Rob rides himself into the ground to try and get me to the finish as fast as possible. Now, tomorrow, 2 days after, he's having a bad day and I'm feeling strong because of that. Like, so just kind of manage that effort, not do it, not overdo it. Ride within yourself.
So this might be a surprise to some, but I am going to be looking at my power meter, and this is the strategy. You use the, I have Garmin, and you put in the route, and they have a feature called Climb Pro. And it's very hard to remember how long all these climbs are, and you hit like a little hill and you don't know. So when Sophia and I hit a climb, and it says the elevation of what's coming up and how much longer you have on it. If it's a 400-foot climb versus a 2,000-foot climb, that's going to be a different pacing that you want to do. And how many times have you looked at your Strava file or your train road file afterwards, and you see that your power goes down the whole climb, right? You started high, and then it was too high for that effort, the length of it, and you just keep dropping, 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 dropping. The faster way to do it, and the better way to do it over a mini stage race, is to evenly pace that climb, where you're not going as far above threshold or better, that you kind of maintain that same power. And I kind of know those that amount of power that I can do, and it's going to go down as the stage race goes on. But I can set the, talk to Sophia what the kind of the pace is and set it. And I think too, if it's not a technical climb, Sophia, and there's not a headwind, some of these things, me going in front might make sense. So that I just pace my own self up, and then you can also push me if you want to, or anything like that. On the first day though, will not be that. There'll be a little bit where I'll just check the power meter to make sure. We'll be so excited. And I've ridden the course, like, besides Plum Pudding, because I wrote it backwards. They're steep stuff. And very easy to start out at 480 watts, right? Going up the first climb. When you should look down and go a little bit less.
I never go out too hard, so that won't be a problem.
John does that every single time. And then John, if he doesn't go out, like, he just barely goes off too hard. He's like, I didn't go out hard enough. It goes back and forth. And I think too, Sophia, I did like 365 or something for 15 minutes on a climb here, mountain biking, and it was like undulating. So I'm not as slow as I'm making out to be, but I'm just not as fast and fit where I was in January. I was like pretty good in January. We were going to kill it in January. But then the race got pushed. But we could be okay.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be watching, I think, heart rate data quite a bit. And then I also do have on my heart rate strap, the little core body temperature device as well. The temperatures aren't going to be that crazy because we're racing, you know, so much later in the year, but I think it's just another good data point to have. And, I think for me, the power is going to be more of like knowing, okay, when I'm riding at, 230, this is kind of like Nate's point, or like, oh, I could, you know, have to go up or down. But I think it's so much more by feel and just communication with your partner and making sure that you cohesively are moving as fast as possible. So
For sure.
I'm going to open up a can of worms, John. A can of worms. Just to message me. And I think I'll say too, if this is legal, but I've been using the Super Sapiens glucose monitor as in training. And I believe it's illegal for UCI pros, but legal for everybody else. So I was going to ask the race official.
I think it's legal in training, but not in racing.
For everybody or just for pros?
UCI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last I read, for UCI, it's legal in training, but not in racing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask the head coach whenever we check in, can I use this during the race? But what we can do, what it does is it gives you every minute, you know, your blood glucose, and there are certain areas that like ranges that are optimal for training. And I've been using this, and that's why I went to double the amount of carbs per hour, because I was watching my glucose when on a long threshold effort, it would just go down, 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 down. And as it goes down, your RPE goes up, 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 up. And then I could eat more and it did not go down as much. So that is also something, I've also noticed it where if I bonk, I see it be really low. And if I can stay ahead of that and I can display it on my Garmin while I'm racing, hopefully I can keep, eating and keeping the glucose up, or just pay attention to it. And also a funny thing, we can do a whole longer thing when we have more experience on it. But I've gone where I go too high of glucose, and that is also extremely hard. And the way to get out of that is to do like a really hard effort. And it almost feels like you want to stop. Yeah, you got to like burn it out really fast.
It's crazy. So
if it gets too high, I might want to tell Sophia we need to gun it right now. Or else I'm going to feel really, really bad. And the insulin comes in and then you kind of crash after that.
That's why I got to 120 to 130. So with the same.
You've been using it too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's why but the biggest thing that I've noticed is just constant feeling is so much better than taking in. And it's not like eating eating like food in some big batch. It's and versus eating it in small batches. It's much like you can see that your blood sugar levels are much less volatile. They're much more consistent. And the same thing on the bike. So it just makes for a much more consistent ability to perform when you are constantly taking in sugar. It's kind of made me question the whole concept of like how I would just take in an entire bottle of carbs in the feed zone in an XCO race and just like chug that bottle and then go. And then, cause that creates, and I've replicated that with a sensor, and that creates me going up and down and up and down. Whereas if I just drink it throughout the race, which is tricky in a mountain bike race, but if I do, it's better. That's why we have packs though. Packs make it easy.
Yeah. It also takes a while for it to impact your blood glucose, right, John? I would say when I do it, like 20 minutes about?
For me, it's 20 minutes if I'm in a sedentary state to an active state. If I'm riding, it takes, and so after the initial warm-up, then if I'm like halfway through my workout and I take something, it takes 2 to 5 minutes for me to see the change. So it's all, I think it's very individually relative too. Like I bet there's a lot of, and it depends on what you eat. If I take in fructose, it goes not as high, but it makes it more sustainable, which is interesting. So I get like longer, extended elevated periods of it. We actually, Nate, you may have not noticed since you've been focusing on other things, but last week we did a full deep dive on this very much thing with Chad, where I only like loosely shared my experiences with it. But yeah, it's going to be helpful. I'm going to be using it. I would say this too, that
they're not available in the US. We actually had, as illegal.
We're part of a beta testing program.
Exactly. I was going to say I had someone else bring them into the US for me. And then afterwards we contact the company and they are giving us free ones, John and I, to try it out and other people. So but they're not giving us money, but
transparency.
Share our experience. Yeah.
We're just nerds that want data. I think that the main takeaway with this though, on like the power discussion and everything else is that it is all going to be like it will change day to day. It might not, but it might change day to day. But power informs perception, right? And like Nate said, it can be a really good tool to be able to use. I wonder if we're going to get routes though. They still haven't released routes, only for the prologue. I want those routes so badly.
I'm working
Thank
on
you,
that.
Russo. Thank you.
Yeah, we should get some, maybe not all of them, but at least the Esselstein, so that's Sierra Stolbach, those ones and the Wellington ones. There's like one or two that are being difficult, but I know a couple of people that's actually gone out and done the routes with the people that set them out.
As long as they send you the right way.
It might change on race day.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust it as my navigation. I'd follow the boards, but just for kind of general.
Or climb pro.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's that would be a really, we have the prologue. That's it. I tried to use Trail Forks, just like reading their description, and that was impossible to try to piece things together. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure what it'll be.
But back to the data. I think that's going to be a third thing along with, you know, the body weight and the kits, just to look at the end of the race, to see that trend from day to day. Cause I guess nobody's going to get faster as the race goes on, but I think it's the team that probably stays most, well, maybe Nate will get faster. The team that stays the most consistent is probably going to be the one that has just paced things best overall if we're looking at that power data across the course of the race.
This sounds funny, but the amount of mountain biking I'm going to do on this race is a lot for me. And we could get faster, Sophia, on descents as I get better and stuff. After stage one, I'll get into
you're going to be so fast in like 2 or 3 weeks. Imagine if there was another Cape Epic a month from now, you guys would kill it.
Actually, we should talk about that. Like, because Rob, you just did Marathon World Championships, which I think is going to take you 6 years to recover from. And everybody that did that race, because that looked so miserable. I don't know where Russo is, everything else. But I had plans of 2 weeks ago having like a really big loading week, and life stress threw me curveballs and I just couldn't train like I wanted to. And then I tried to train thereafter and like really kind of almost like panic and make up for it with adaptive training. It was like, here's your next workout. And I was like, no, I want a stretch workout. I don't want the achievable or productive workouts. And I couldn't finish them. And I was like, I'll just pack it in and I'll just take recovery. I don't have to worry about being the fastest thing in the world going into this. And in fact, I want to be more fresh. So like right now I feel really from a training stress perspective, super fresh and like ready. And like, I don't have a lot on me right now. It's kind of like the place I want to be. Brandon, how do you feel? We have a lot of stuff we're working on at work. So there's a bunch of work stress, but.
Yeah. So this one's been a little bit interesting because the fact we're leaving the Monday before has, I've had to fight that urge to be like, oh, we're training towards the Monday before, when really it's another week after that until we even start the race. So I've really been trying to stay on top of still having a few hard workout days during the week. But that has gotten more and more difficult as we've gotten closer to this this event, because there's a ton of preparation and additional stress that go into trying to plan for this.
Are you guys, Rob and Rousseau, do you guys feel fresh or do you feel tired?
To be honest, after Marathon Worlds, it took me a bit longer to turn the watts again that I felt I was comfortable at, like psychologically as well. I was a bit like, this isn't great, but like more and more now I'm kind of, especially yesterday after I did some efforts, I was like kind of back to that point of kind of like super stoked and like hit the watts, felt good. Like, and then I'm just sort of maintaining that and then taking it easy into Epic for a taper week. And then all systems go, I hope.
I'm actually still doing a race this weekend. One of the local marathons. So I think that'll be a nice final last little 3-hour suffer. And then after that, I'll probably take it, just take it easy, going into Epic. But yeah. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say I'm like overly trained or anything. I had quite an easy week last week. So like kind of little sharpening up this week and then the race and then going into Epic. So I think we got the timing pretty good.
Sophia, how do you feel?
Me? I'm good now. I crashed at the Pikes Peak Apex on the last day and I had to get 5 stitches on my kneecap, which wasn't a big deal, but when it's 2 stitches on a joint, you cannot move. So I limped for about a week and I got him out Sunday. Monday was a little painful to ride. And then now I'm fine, but I did have to get a bunch of body work done just because my right side of my body, since I was limping, everything was super tight. So I'm in California now. I race Sea Otter on Saturday and Sunday. So kind of training through that. And then, we fly out at 8 p.m. out of San Francisco on Monday. So it's coming really quick.
Cool.
Nate, you're fresh as Daisy, right? Freshness is high.
Well, I haven't been sleeping, so like I would say I'm not fresh.
But, okay. But yeah. So fitness is low, freshness is low, but correct. Only up from here.
I got Sophia as my teammate.
Ever the optimist.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Nice. Should we do predictions, Sean?
Yeah, I think that is a great place to round things out. So I want to hear, we're going to check in with you guys every day. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I want to hear pre-race predictions from where you're sitting right now, not just about yourself and your teammate, but the other teams, where you think this thing's going to shake out. So why don't we, Jonathan, we'll start with you and Brandon.
I sign your paychecks just so you guys know.
Brandon, I think we probably agree on who's going to be first here.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. Easy. Yeah. I think we all agree. Robin Rousseau, have fun up in that A group. You're going to do fantastic. We'll cheer for you guys from way behind, I'm sure. But I think that it will actually be closer than people might think between Nate, Sophia, Brandon, and I. I know that like the numbers may not show that, but I suspect that Brandon and I will just make mistakes. And who knows, Nate and Sophia might also make mistakes, but that very well could even it out between us. But
I don't think it's going to be close. maybe close early on, but I'd say the middle to from the middle of the race on, it's not going to be close.
Mm-hmm. I think Brandon
and Sophia, what do you guys think?
Sophia, you want to go first?
I mean, I think it's a stage race and anything can happen. Honestly, I think
yeah,
you can crash, break your bike, you can you know, get stitches on your kneecap and then you can't pedal. Like, you know what I mean? You can make all the predictions you want, but even sometimes the most favorite teams still have bad days. And I think going in that with an expectation of just finishing, like goal number one, like let's get through every stage and just finish and then just kind of see where everybody kind of lands. But I think, you know, the more positive that we all stay, the better the morale is going to be. And then the faster we're all going to be. And, you know, thank you to Nate for getting us, you know, the nice hotel, the food service. You know, I think all those things are going to help us actually be able to, you know, have a great experience and then put down some good times. And yeah, I mean, it's 8 days in South Africa. I think it's going to be super fun. So. Mm-hmm.
She says that because her partner is one whopper kilo slower than her. But maybe like look at animals and stuff. And yeah. So Robin Rousseau, you're going to kill it. Do the trainer own name proud. I'm happy for you guys to be there. John and Brandon, I think what will happen is you guys will actually, the opposite of what Brandon says, you're going to start out with a bigger gap. And then you guys will you two are so competitive when you race. You two are different people. if there is anyone that you see, you guys will be going as hard as you possibly can to do it. And the Brandon knows this, and he's got John to help him with. But historically, Brandon's had problems eating on long races. Mm. Right, Brandon?
Long single day races, not stage races.
How many? Okay, so you're good at eating in a stage race, just not in a single day.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. So we'll see how that goes out. But if he does not eat a bunch, he could bonk and stuff and have an issue. Sophia and I don't know if Sophia can, but I can. It doesn't really matter. Sophia can lose a whopper kilo. She doesn't need to eat this whole time. She's going keto. just <kidding. laughs> I'm just joking. I can. That's the one thing that I can probably do better than anyone here is I can eat a lot. And that is very important on a stage race. I can eat on the bike and afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I can hopefully I'll be able to sleep too. So I think... For us, I think it will be enjoyable. There'll be a couple crashes, but hopefully nothing too big. And then I think we will end up, I'm going to say 12th overall in the GC and the co-ed. And we're going
to... Are we going to win a stage?
No. The Starks won every single stage. It's literally like you and Keegan racing with Keegan pushing you. That's how fast they are. He's like 6 watts per kilo, the other guy.
Yeah, I call that cheating. Come on. You're a strong, independent young woman. Like, you can pedal your own bike. Come on.
I thought about that. I was like, I didn't work with sponsors, but I was like, if I go out, I wonder if I could get Keegan down there just to like beat them.
Well, he considered, yeah, I think I'm fine sharing this, but also on the last day of Colorado Springs, the Pikes Peak Apex race, Lachlan Morton and Alex Howes were there. They were going to do Cape Epic, and Alex Howes broke his pinky. And then Lachlan kind of threw it out there to Keegan, like, are you interested in doing Cape Epic? But I think they just have way too many conflicting sponsors and it just wasn't going to line up. But he considered coming. So I thought that was interesting.
That'd been cool. We should say too, John, we're going to be staying before in Sea Point, like the Bantry Bay Sea Point area in Cape Town. And I think we're going to do some road rides on our mountain bike.
For sure.
Correct? To do in the morning. And if people want to join us, are we going to post that or should we do it by ourselves?
We'll
or?
Post that. It's probably best to stay tuned to our personal Instagram channels or the Trainer Road forum for both of those things. So you can find all of us on Instagram. If you just search for our names, you can also find it in the description below, but I think that's probably the best way to do it. It'd be great to meet some of you and ride with you. And I've gotten that question a lot if people are asking if we're going to be doing any rides beforehand. So yeah, we'd love to.
It is so beautiful. Where we're going to ride.
Like we could put it on the Trainer Road Instagram too. Sorry, Nate. Just
awesome.
We could put it on the stories on there too. Yeah.
Cool. Rob Rousseau, you know where that is, right? Where we're going to ride. It's like a famous.
Yeah. Amazing. Really, really cool.
It's like one of the best in the world. It is so cool.
I realize Brandon and I suck at predictions. We should get specific. So Rob and Rousseau are going to this is just overall time. They're going to be top 15, I think, over that of the whole entire field.
How big is the field?
I think they're doing 300 teams this year. Is that correct?
Okay.
But that top 15 includes like Nino and.
Yeah.
Yeah. No Nino.
Yeah.
Yeah. No Nino this year.
The elite field is lacking, but it makes sense because good luck racing a Cape Epic in October and then back again in March. That'd be way too. too much.
Yeah, I think the elite field's missing most of these sort of XC punches, like Nino and those Manny's not riding. Yeah. But there's quite a few, from when I was at in Alba for Marathon Worlds, quite a few of the European marathon teams are coming out. Most of them are racing this weekend in France, and then they're coming out for Epic. So it's not as a pointy end, but I think the field's pretty, like, I wouldn't say deep, but pretty consistent throughout. So it's going to be awesome to watch 10. For something different.
Robin Rousseau are going to be top 10. Never mind. So top 10 overall. So
can I change what I said earlier? There's actually some super strong teams.
I think Brandon and I are going to be, our goal is going to be, we'll just say, if we can finish within top 40, that would be awesome. I think that would be like a really good goal.
Yeah, I was going to say top 50. So I think that's right there.
How hilarious is it? Top 40 or top 50, like us making up like these benchmarks. but I think that's where if we can do a really well executed race, that's where we'd sit. And that's like overall. Nate and Sophia, I think that I just don't even know enough about the co-ed to actually put you in the spot. Yeah,
this is how it goes. In general, this is a generalization. The man is usually the faster person in the co-ed team. Where this one, there's obviously a big swap on it. So basically, I need to compare myself against other women. Like, do I usually beat other women in races? The women pro field is usually one thing. The Starks, they would have gotten like second in the women's pro field or something, like behind Annika. Yeah, exactly. They're at a whole nother level. And then there are other people that are pretty close to them still that are very good with formal pros on the team, pretty much. But after that, it could be regular people, right? So women who are around 4.2, 4.5 watts per kilo, that's all pretty rare, I think, especially for a non-pro. So in there, that's why we could be top 12 or something, because that's where our like comparison is. But they could also be a lot faster than me downhill. And who knows what's going to happen after many days and all that sort of stuff. Mm.
Rob and Russo, you guys haven't ridden with everybody else here, but predictions just for your own finish?
Well, I was actually going to give a prediction on Nate and Sophia.
Excellent.
regret saying that. But just like what Nate just mentioned, like the male in the sort of co-ed category being a bit stronger. But I think with the fact that you and Sophia are almost war matched, I think you might ride. I mean, if you're not slinging each other, like you said, some people do, you might match each other far better. And I think like Sophia mentioned earlier, I think you could do well in surprising yourself. Especially in the co-ed field.
Cool.
Look at those guns. Nice guns. Lose them
all. Awesome. Wow. This is happening. Yeah. I've like hesitated even mentioning this thing because I was so worried that even just mentioning it would make it not happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it has not started yet.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. I did not anticipate being excited for this race. Like, it's so far from what I usually enjoy, and I am so excited for this. I cannot wait.
The race itself
is what I'm most excited for. You know,
I was so excited for it, and now I'm not looking forward to it at all. And John was like, "I will never ever do this race. It sounds blah 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 blah." And now he is probably the most excited of anybody here doing it about racing it.
Mm. I'm super excited. Well, run on my excitement. There's plenty of it. You can borrow.
Thank you.
It's there for you.
All of us that aren't racing are certainly excited to see how things go. And especially those of us that have listened to the podcast for a long time. I feel like you all have been talking about this for literally, 2 or 3 years now? So it's amazing to see it actually finally come to fruition. Cool. So during the race, we're going to have daily updates on the progress of each team. Each of you teams will send me a little video update on how things are going, and I'll recap the course and we'll hear from you every day. So really excited about that. And we think those are going to drop at about noon Eastern on YouTube and all the podcast apps. And then next week on Thursday, the 14th, Jonathan, Russo, and I, we're going to do a full course preview going through every stage, talking about logistics, challenges. Hopefully you guys have course maps and routes by then.
Hopefully.
We're going to try.
Yep.
So yeah, super excited. I can't wait to see how this goes, and folks at home can keep up. We're going to have blog posts going up on the blog on trainerroad.com. We're going to have stuff posted on Instagram and all the social media channels. So you're not going to be able to avoid it. And I'm really excited to see how things play out. Hopefully everybody makes it through safe and sound and just has a good time.
It'll be awesome.
Yep.
Nate, you're going to do better than you think.
Yeah, I think you're going to ride into it. Like, it's going to, you know, finish strong. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I like the idea of just like, we'll do like 9 hour days and we'll do a stage win, Sophia, just so we can say we have a Cape Epic stage win. Like,
you're the boss. You're the boss.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. And talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. See you soon.
Cheers. See you soon. Cheers.